Hello, I'm Llewellyn King, the host of White House Chronicle, which is coming right up. I'm glad to tell you that this show today is underwritten by Public Utilities Fortnightly, which is conducting a special conference in November in Scottsdale, Arizona, to examine the impact of solar power, wind power, and other new sources of generating on the old electric model. Will it make for a privileged few who can afford rooftop panels, or will it in fact help our generating and clean the air? It's all taking place on November 17 and 18 in Scottsdale, Arizona. You can go to the Public Utilities Fortnightly website to learn more. Well, I've been asked to go back and do what I used to do, a few thoughts of my own. And I was thinking about the Constitution of the U.S., extraordinary document. Extraordinary in its effects, and extraordinary, too, because it hasn't been over-amended. I mean, there have been thousands of attempts to amend it, and it hasn't happened. Some years ago in Ireland, during the Irish peace talks, I was debating one of the leaders of the IRA, and he was telling me this and that, and it actually went very well. He was a very bright guy. And I said, well, if you write a constitution, do it the American way and put it on a very high shelf where it cannot be reached. Otherwise, people will amend the hell out of it. The other great constitution is the English constitution, which owes its origins to the Magna Carta, but it's not written down anywhere. But of course, there are a lot of lawyers who will tell you what it says. It's all precedent, and it all goes back in some measure to the Magna Carta. It's a good thing to have a written constitution, so long as it's a brilliant document. We're quite lucky in that regard, although sometimes I wonder at the interpretations put on it. I'm joined today by a very special guest. He is Travis Escobar of the Millennial Professional Group, and we're going to be talking about millennials. I, by the way, am not one. You might notice that. Linda Gasparello, the co-host of this program.
I'm nearly a millennial.
Has marijuana been legalized in this region? Tom Patterson, a very gifted writer and thinker and architect. His specialty is saving old buildings, bringing them back to life, finding new uses for glorious buildings of the 19th and earlier times, of the 19th century and earlier times, and a very gifted sketch artist. So what he's doing here is not only contributing wisely to our deliberations, but also drawing sketches which we will show to you at the end of the program. If, unfortunately, you are on radio, and we do have an awful lot of radio listeners, and we're very glad of that, I'll just have to describe them to you. But you can see the sketches he's done on this program at whchronicle.com on the web, so all is not lost. And finally, not one assumes least, Jim Rehm, who's a fundraising executive, mainly for universities. He's the man who comes around and says, wouldn't you like to remember your alma mater in your will, or somebody else's alma mater, whoever it is, which seems to be the way it goes. I trust he's going to remember this program in his will, and that will take
good
care
idea.
Of, that will take care of Linda's old age. I want to...
In the distant future, of course, my old age, since I am nearly
I want to talk about millennials. I was having a meal with the originating station of this program, Chronicle and WHUT, beg your pardon, in Washington, distinguished African-American university. Howard University operates that station. And a friend of mine from the Edison Electric Institute, both very middle class, very successful African-American men. And we were talking about young people, and they both sort of turned on me and my lack of understanding of young people, because they both had children who were millennials. And they said, Travis, they were different. And as I don't believe generations are really that different. But anyway, they said they had different value set, different career path, and the more I look at it and think about it, I think that may be so. What do you have to say about it?
Well, When talking about millennials, we're talking about the current state of our country, but also the future, right? We're the largest share of the workforce. We're the largest population in America right now. But also, I don't really know how to answer in terms of, are the millennial generation different from previous generations? I think technology has had a lot to do with making us different. For example, social media. Social media is giving our generation different viewpoints. It's giving us an easier time to connect with one another, an easier time for us to organize, but also an easier time to really do our jobs as well, because we're able to have that information and take that back into our workplace.
So you're saying the defining thing has probably been the presence of these technological sources of education, information, lifestyle?
Yes, definitely. I'm a community organizer in Providence, Rhode Island, and before coming on to the studio, I was with a group of 15-year-olds, and they are deep into their phones. It's the first thing that they get into when they wake up. It's probably the first thing, the last thing that they see when they go to sleep. But they're using that to Google and research, and they're using it's anything that they're curious about. They're always one search away and finding out that information. So I think that's what makes us different. Information is right there, readily available.
That's interesting, Jim. You remember the '60s? That was another different generation. And that was made different, if I might say so, by the fact that we lost confidence in established institutions in the 60s, with the Vietnam War, the women's movement, the civil rights movement, and the environmental movement, which caused people of your generation and possibly of mine, I'm somewhat older than you all, nonetheless to turn against and to have a new set of views. There's a saying, for example, that most decisions are too important to be left to the experts, which was okay, except when you're flying aeroplanes or constructing nuclear weapons.
Or brain surgery.
Absolutely. How do you feel about that?
Well, if we look at even just popular music, you know, the 40s, the Andrews Sisters and Glenn Miller, the 50s, Elvis Presley, the 60s, the Beatles, the 70s, Kiss and so forth, the rise of rap and hip hop. Yes, I think there are differences. There's also a great many commonalities as well. I wanted in just being prepared for you and the program, I came across two interesting factoids. Millennials were asked, would they be interrupt their career for the needs of their family? And 37% of millennial women said yes, they would agree that they would interrupt their career for their family. Of my peer boomers, only 17% said they would interrupt their career for their family. So kind of interesting.
That's a substantial difference.
Yeah. And then let's flip that around. In the Pew study on millennials, and I hate to be such a nerd, you know, throwing out statistics, but people were asked,
you're a nerd, by the way.
can other people be trusted? And fascinatingly, only 19% of millennials said that other people can be trusted. Among us boomers, it was an amazing 40%. All right? So two interesting changes right there. But, you know, it's all good. It's all a part of life evolution. The Travis, you were talking to 15-year-olds. Do you realize that they have always lived with the atrocity attack of 9/11?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And millennials, like yourself, you've always lived with the internet.
Well, Linda and I have just been on assignment in Vietnam, where almost the entire population was born after the war.
That's
and
right.
So they have a very different view, whereas in this country, a great number of the population were alive and affected by the Vietnam.
I am a baby boomer. I'd like to say that I'm closer to millennials, but I'm not. I'm of the generation right now that is now employing millennials. And one of the things that I've seen in the employment of millennials is that we came up sort of at a time where women were coming into the workplace in a big way. men and women both had jobs. You know, they both tried to raise families. Families didn't always make it. They broke up. Jobs were really, really important for them. They sacrificed a lot for their careers. Millennials these days, I think, are looking at the job market and looking at these baby boomers that are, you know, that have hired them, and they're saying, you know, we want a little flexibility in our life.
Yeah.
And technology is going to be able to give us this flexibility. We don't want to, we want to work in an exciting career in Los Angeles, but we know housing there is really, really expensive. We would rather live somewhere else because guess what? We've got college debts to pay off. So what we would really ideally like to do is to live somewhere that's less expensive, maybe even move home to a different state and do the work that we're doing on our laptop. You figure it out. We, this is what we want to do, and if you want to keep us, you have to give us this flexibility. Am I right or wrong on that?
No, I definitely agree. I think our generation has more of an entrepreneurial spirit. But also, I don't think this whole 9-to-5, the history of doing a 9-to-5, I don't think that exists anymore, or it shouldn't exist anymore, because individuals can take their work at home and do it and accomplish it. You don't have to be in an office to do most of the work now.
I also think that the security of that is now gone too. That what used to be able to support lots and lots of middle class and upper middle class people right out of college doesn't exist anymore. That whole framework. But there's one more thing that I want to go back to what Llewellyn said, and that is that, and what you said, and that is that I think we it's yet to see what the millennials, how it's going to play out, the fact that they basically grew up in a state of war. America is at war with the world, and there are conflicts left, right, center, whether it's in the Middle East. Sometimes we get involved in places that I barely know of. And I can't help but think that this is a constant background to everything else you're learning, everything else you're acquiring, is I don't know whether it's a positive thing or a negative thing. I thought growing up during the Vietnam War, I along with everybody else, hoped I could see the light at the end of the tunnel. But when I look at my daughter, who's 17 years old, I say, our constant alertness for things that may harm us, it's just going to get worse. It's not going to get better. So I wonder if that has a psychological effect on a whole society.
I think our generation is more concerned with how can we start, you know, buying a house, or how can we be financially secure, you know.
In other words, traditional.
In the 1960s, as I recall, young people, and we were concerned with stopping the war because we didn't want to fight it, or not everybody wanted to fight it. We were appalled by when we realized what had happened to the environment, a river catching fire, birds dying because of the use of a DDT, the anti, you know, pesticide. We were concerned that the civil rights issue had been overlooked, largely overlooked by institutions. There were a lot of things, and there was a kind of idealism which seemed to dissipate as the years went by. We also were concerned with, and this is an important issue, I think, with prison reform. Because enough young people went to prison and found out how god-awful the prisons were. And as the war faded and those people moved ahead in society and became lawyers and doctors and whatever, they were no longer being sent to prison, and only the poor and the voiceless went to prison, and we lost that reform energy. I'm glad to see it's coming back to some extent. We are going to take a little station break, largely for the benefit of our listeners on Sirius XM Radio, where I'm glad to say this program can be heard 4 times on the weekends. I also can be heard myself on Sirius XM, the POTUS channel, 124, same place where the audio for this program is, on most Friday mornings in drive time. This program can be seen on 200 American television stations and around the world on the stations, television and radio, of Voice of America. We're so glad you're with us. We have our artist drawing here. You won't be able to see him if you're a radio listener, but we will put it on our website, whchronicle.com. Well worth a look. Linda, you have something to add.
I do. I think that millennials these days, you know, I'm just looking at some of the moves that are in the White House. The show is White House Chronicle, and the president has reflected a lot of the things that were concerns at the time that you brought up. Climate change, you know, we've got immigration, you know, we've got, prison reform that he's just launched. I mean, there are a lot of things that are going to play out in this election, and millennials are going to be really, really important in this election, as they were in the previous two. And so we're going to be drawing on, you're going to start to see the pollsters, you know, looking at, what do the millennials feel about this? And I say they're engaged in this, and I'm sure, Travis, you find this. I don't think we're looking at young men and women your age who are detached from these things that they're bringing up at the level of the White House.
For the aforementioned radio listeners, that was Linda Gasparello. Responding is Travis Escobar.
Yeah, I don't believe our generation is as detached from politics as, you know, some of the articles that I've read. Again, it's very easy for our generation to seek out information, be it, you know, what's trending on Twitter, what's on Facebook, especially for individuals that are following the national media outlets. But I think it's less of an international view from millennials in America and more of what's going on domestically, especially with race relations and the police shootings and the killings. And even prison reform. I think that's more on the top of a lot of millennials' political spectrum than, you know, for example, the Iran deal. But again, it's going to boil down to, I think the number one political issue that's going to come out eventually, maybe not this election, but in the next election, is going to be student loan reform. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you have Senator Elizabeth Warren, who I think if she ran this year could have really taken a big block from Hillary Clinton, because she would have gotten a lot of young voters because she's speaking that language in terms of reforming student loan debt. That's going to be one of the top political points to look at.
Remember, it's not too late for you to whisper in these candidates' ears about that. And don't be surprised if someone like Hillary Clinton brings this up as part of her campaign.
Jim Rame.
Well, let me build on both of what you said. And let's look at some of the trends. Millennials are heavy social media users. They seek out product information, peer reviews, and prices. There's a look at what happened just last summer with the ALS and the Ice Bucket Challenge.
Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely spectacular fundraising device. But in 2015, you didn't hear about it. But it was driven by social media.
But let me tell you that it's been copied. I am part of a copy, which is for a charity I work for called Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, also known as myalgia encephalomyelitis, and I am on YouTube crunching on a chili. And
a chili pepper. Yes.
A chili pepper.
Was really
not
insane.
A habanero. Don't tell me it was a habanero.
No, I had a glass of milk. I was ready to suffer. Tom Patterson. Speak.
Again, with the millennials, the most amazing thing in watching my daughter, who is 17, is that what is assumed about social media is just incredible to me. But I try to impress upon her that there are negative sides to that too, with this little device. As someone once posed to me, they said, do you realize that there is a something that the that knows where you are all the time and what you're doing? It's that kind of thing that, and I don't know how many millennials understand or realize that, but the possibilities of that being misused are mind-boggling. Yeah. And I also wanted to ask all of you, do you think, politically speaking, that, let's say, people who are under 30, do you think they're as evenly distributed in the political spectrum as, say, the age group above that or above that?
In terms of who's Democrat and Republican?
That would be on paper, And more importantly, at least in this state, is who's independent, which is basically 50% of the voters, is not so much on paper or how they're registered, but what the perception of their political attitude
is. I want to add to that question, if you can hold it in mind, is will they vote? Young people have been very opinionated and then don't vote traditionally.
Well, I'll say that a lot of research I've been reading, millennials have been leaning more toward democratic values, specifically socially.
Are you speaking regionally or across the country?
Across the country. Okay. But I think when talking about the circus that is the Republican Party right now, mm-hmm. I think there's a space in the future, not for this election, but I think in the future for more of a libertarian point of view, because yes, when you micro-target a message in terms of these devices that we have, you know, the privacy, the whole privacy mm-hmm. question, I think that's going to enter into the minds of a lot of millennials as, you know, as we grow older. So maybe that could be that, and privacy and student loans could be huge issues 8 years down the line.
Yeah. It's interesting.
I would caveat what you've said with the idea that perhaps socially libertarian, but maybe fiscally conservative.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, again, that sense of the sensible center, where I like to define myself as a proud boomer as well. Mm-hmm. But again, the idea of the distrust of large organizations mm-hmm. that we don't always believe what is being told us, and again, back to the 60s, as you said. But again, I just wonder if that dynamic is in play, as well as isn't it also issue by issue? You know, same-sex marriage, for example, women's reproductive mm-hmm. health issues, and so forth.
These were issues which in the 60s and 70s would not have got a serious hearing. The evolution of social values has been quite substantial. I wanted to mention social values. Sort of entered the world, as it were, in the late 1950s. That's when I first went to work, which is when I think you enter the world in a way. And we were very affected by the values of the Second World War, duty, honor, etc. 10 years later, those were despised. Those were wrong. In my generation, you got married at 21, probably. 5 years into the 60s, that was not necessary. You lived together. It changed very quickly, and it changed because of all of these things going on in society that I mentioned. And I think this is another decade of change, where the changes are enormous, and what happens with change is you don't go back to the status quo ante. You may recede, but recede in a different way. Or you may continue to move forward to even greater social mobilization and independence, and even fewer societal strictures.
Can I make a point in support of what you've just said? The percent of young people married and living on their own has dropped by more than half since 1968. Mm. The figures are 56% of young people married living on their own in 68. And in 2012, it had dropped only 23%. This is the reality. The millennials.
Would you blame Tinder?
Pardon me?
I said, would you blame Tinder?
I'm just Well, but the point being is that the millennials, or Generation Y, it's also known as, they've got these double-headed hydras of lower rates of employment, lower rates of payment, high debt. The figures I looked up were an average of $20,000 in debt. I personally think that's low. I think it's more than that.
I would like to suggest that what I have seen, and it's not a very representative sample, but young people, including my colleague and friend who helped us with this program, Mario Vega, who has a very creative work he's doing on the internet. His Plusery is a fairly revolutionary debate on the internet, etc., and a photographer I worked with in Washington, are no longer on the old career path.
They're
self-employed from day one.
Right.
They don't feel the need to exhibit their skills to their peers by getting a good job. In my day, you got a job, you were terribly keen to move up a prescribed ladder, to be seen to be moving up, to work for this organization or that, and to be defined where you work. But now people do not care to be defined by where they work in the same way.
Yeah, not at all. I think it also depends on the employers in terms of what atmosphere they're providing for millennials.
Absolutely.
But also, there's nothing is forever. The old career path, you climbed the greasy pole, you became a vice president, you were made for life,
you retired with
a good with a gold watch and an income, a pension. All that is gone. Nobody has that kind of confidence in the future. So why embark on that path if it doesn't have a future?
Let me break in here for a minute. And I think that what I discussed before about millennials would like flexibility.
Yes.
They like work-life balance. Mm-hmm. I think most corporations are not offering that kind of, most traditional corporations are not offering that kind of flexibility. And they've got to catch up to this idea that
definitely.
If you want to retain your millennials, you are going to have to offer the flexibility to work off-site. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to offer time off, offer a lot of things that millennials want. And then the other thing is, I think it's interesting the way millennials have transformed a lot of cities. Now, there's a city that I'm thinking of. Washington, D.C. is a perfect case in point of that. Sleepy town for many of the years that I've been in Washington. And it has become this booming millennial cauldron. Millennial cauldrons are even in the city of Denver, Salt Lake City. I went to a summer school course in Salt Lake City in 1973. And honestly, you couldn't have asked for a sleepier town. It's a hot place now. It offers the outdoors. It offers low-cost housing. It offers a lot of things that millennials want. What are cities going to have to do to attract millennials, to retain them in the future?
Yeah.
They have the ability to transform a city.
That's a very good
not
question.
Not only that, they have the ability to transform a society in that the people who are younger that I know don't drive.
No,
that's incredible.
We want to be able to walk from our job to our house.
And therefore, they want to use reimagined, redone urban areas. Therefore, you're cutting out the old developers' sprawl that surrounds most cities. And that to me is very important.
It is time for us to start looking at the artwork from our
distinguished
artist. Tom Patterson,
what do we have,
the
Tom?
Deadline illustrator.
Well, I was trying to draw the parallels between love, peace, and happiness generation of the late 60s and the crowdsourcing millennial generation. And actually, what I wrote down here I think is true. Maybe you can read that. I don't know whether you can read my writing.
Crowdsourcing is what... of what Abbie Hoffman was looking for.
Absolutely.
I love it.
That's right.
Here is, if you're a radio listener, we will put this on our website, whchronicle.com. It's quite brilliant. Thank you, Tom Patterson, Deadline Illustrator.
Thank you. I
need
that moniker.
Thank you all. It's been a great pleasure to have you with us.